Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast segment. In today's show, we will be talking with Ms. Renata Budko, the Chief Marketing Officer at WallArm. They are based in San Francisco, California. Renata, thank you for your time, and let's go ahead and get started.
Thanks for having me, Ravi.
Thank you for your time. Your background seems quite varied. Can you please explain to us in a little bit more detail how you got interested in cybersecurity and what brought you to WallArm?
Sure. So I've been in the industry for quite some time. I started as a software engineer back in the day. And then after I got my MBA, I switched over to product marketing and business development. And I first got interested in the infrastructure. And as you can imagine, back in the day, infrastructure meant Hewlett Packard or Intel, and a little bit later, VMware. And for the last 12 years or so, I got into cybersecurity. And the most interesting foray in cybersecurity that I've had was my founding a company called HITRUST, which is specifically in the space of securing the cloud infrastructure. And I got into that because it was extremely clear that to enable this new cloud world, security is a paramount. So HITRUST was founded with the idea that security for VMware is what is going to get VMware from being a development tool to being a foundation of the full production cloud services. Lo and behold, 10 years later, now we see that that concept has come to fruition. We see clouds in production everywhere, both VMware-based and based on other platforms. Security remains an important foundational part of this new infrastructure. As far as WallArm is concerned, I've always been interested in startups, especially in startups with cutting technologies. So when the two founders have approached me in early 2017, I've found the team to be great, and the approach that they've proposed and the technology that was the foundation of WallArm product both appealed to me tremendously. And that's how I got involved with this team, and we've been moving this product forward for the last 2 years and some.
Sounds excellent. How did you get into cloud security?
As I mentioned, I got into cloud security about 12 years ago, specifically founding HITRUST was my biggest foray into this. That company now has about, maybe $70-80 million in revenue. And we still continue moving forward in strides because security enables the migration to the cloud. And I think we'll talk about it a little bit more later in the podcast.
Okay, sounds good. Now, please tell us more about WallArm, and can you give us a corporate overview and its mission and its main objective?
Of course. WallArm was founded in 2013, and the company has moved to United States in 2016 by being accepted and graduating from Y Combinator class 2016. And we actually were one of the top performing companies in that class revenue-wise. And the mission of the company is twofold. We want to protect applications that drive today's business from hackers and threats of tomorrow. And the second part of this mission is we want to do this in a way that is transparent and automated and doesn't slow down the development and operations process. So again, the same theme is very apparent here, security as an enabler as opposed to an inhibitor.
Now, obviously, there are many other cybersecurity firms out there, you know, like on the West Coast, East Coast, What separates WallArm from the rest of the crowd, and what is its strategic advantage? In other words, why should a customer come to you first versus somebody else?
Excellent question, Ravi. So as a startup, I guess one of the first and unexpected things that I see WallArm and that have attracted me to WallArm and that should attract customers to WallArm is how proven and established this solution is, despite the company still being young. We currently protect over 140 enterprise and cloud customers from potential security threats. And we do that not just for the applications, but also there is strong focus on the APIs and microservices, which means that with deploying high trust, companies make their security future-proof. Whether they stay with the current technology stack or they move to a new generation of containers and microservices, they stay local or they move into the cloud, WallArm technology is going to support them through this migration and enable a secure and robust cloud deployment free from the fears and worries about hackers and bots an aggressive internet environment. The technology and strategic aspect of this, which makes makes WallArm unique, is the cloud automation part. While there are some other solutions on the market that deliver web application firewalls and attack mitigations, there are some other solutions that compete with our other product for CI/CD security testing automation. But all of these other solutions rely on a generic set of patterns that they use to detect malicious things or vulnerabilities. And because these patterns are generic, to apply them to specific applications, the end users or enterprise companies end up using a lot of human resources to customize and to upkeep the regular expressions that rely on this pattern. When we started the company, we've realized that these security resources are not available, nor are they flexible enough to maintain the newer patterns of application development. So for security to remain in lockstep with the newer way of developing applications, automation is required. And that's why our slogan is AI-powered application security. And our AI engine, which we have implemented as a SaaS service, is the core of our automation engine. And the strategic advantage there is relying on this deep learning, a neural network. We can automatically generate better set of detection rules than any other vendors out there can, even with the help of a lot of manual labor and operational upkeep.
Okay. Sounds good. Can you explain to us the concept of continuous integration and continuous deployment, please?
Of course. So for the topic of this podcast, I specifically wanted to look at continuous integration and continuous deployment. And everybody who has been developing software in the last 10 years understands what CI/CD is. And it is extremely crucial to how software gets developed today. Looking at it historically, it started as versioning just because people needed to collaborate, teams needed to collaborate when multiple developers participate into putting together the same software project. So if you think back to the days of subversion or perforce, people would check out certain pieces of code, modify it, check it back in, and this way the code base got reconciled and it would exist in a single place and there would be a single a source of truth, so to speak. Gradually, this versioning software has grew into the concept of continuous integration. It's pretty intuitive. Every time a developer checks in code, the code gets compiled, and some basic set of regression tests gets run on it. That process of making sure that after every check-in, the entire application is ready to run and basically functional. That concept is referred to as continuous integration. And in terms of continuous integration, you may have heard of open source projects like Jenkins or CircleCI. And they both have been around for a long time, and they very much continue to evolve and continue to be developed and supported both by commercial companies and by open source communities. Now, in the relatively recent times, the concept of continuous integration got extended with continuous deployment. And that idea there is that since we now have the application tested somewhat, and we know that it is capable of running, why don't we finish the testing and let the new features that just been developed roll out into production and become available to the users of the application? So continuous deployment is a relatively recent concept, and it very much goes in lockstep with the concept of DevOps and agile development. In fact, conceptually all three are similar, but typically what you see is for agile development to assume releases every maybe week or on the days type of time scale. DevOps assumes releases hourly or maybe daily at the most. And in the case of continuous delivery, you may see releases as frequently as every several minutes. So the faster the development cycle progresses, the quicker we see the new improvements in the applications. And then, of course, it carries with itself new requirements for both operations, testing, and security infrastructure.
Sounds excellent. Now, what does the cloud bring into this process?
That's an excellent question. I would argue that cloud didn't bring anything into this process. Interestingly enough, migration to the cloud is also a trend, as I was talking about VMware, a trend that has developed over the course of the last 10 to 15 years. In this case, we are looking at optimized shared infrastructure where servers, especially in the case of public clouds, servers are used by multiple companies, multiple end users, and this allows them to be more efficient with regards to utilizing computing and cloud infrastructure, as well as has much more flexibility to increase the capacity in case of the peak demand or to try new things, new development projects that has poor predictability with how much resources they're going to need down the pike. These processes, DevOps and cloud migration, have very much developed in parallel. And the fact that we now have development cycles that are very short, like I was mentioning, could be as quick as minutes or even weeks, is a lot shorter than we've seen in the previous development processes that could take months or years. So when development processes are this short, predicting the infrastructure and resource requirements well ahead of time, enough for procurement process, enough for deployment of physical servers, or ordering facilities, or making sure your electrical and AC infrastructure is in place. It just doesn't work. So the two processes have developed along the parallel path. DevOps and cloud, or DevOps and CI/CD, are highly correlated, but I don't know that there is a dependency across one or another.
Okay. what specific processes ways of thinking needs to change in order for a business or a corporation to adopt to continuous integration and continuous deployment?
I love this question, Ravi. My favorite part of the conversation when I get to talk to customers is not what security threats they're facing, and not specifically what operational tools they may be using. It's exactly this. What should I be thinking about? What becomes different when this continuous deployment and continuous integration goes into place? And a lot of this thinking, interestingly enough, is not even about technology at all. It's about people. The entire development cycle is 5 minutes, and it releases every 5 minutes, there is not necessarily time for two extra pairs of eyes an entire extra QA team to look at the robustness of the software, to make sure that nothing got broken, to make sure that the code got checked in, didn't negatively affect the other modules within the application, whether it's a logical part of it, or we're talking about availability, or even things like licensing and use of open source software. And then again, you throw clouds into this mix, and you have a whole new swarm of problems as to what are your governance processes for managing access to Amazon AWS? What is your key management infrastructure, and who is responsible for the risks of running that? Is it your CISO? Is it your CTO? Is it perhaps a chief risks officer in your company that should look at that? Because the cycles are so quick, do you need additional risk protections? Should you think about cyber security insurance? Are you using any open source software modules to accelerate this? Are they separated perhaps into separate containers? Are you using container reputation tools to make sure that none of the contributions from into these modules come from undesirable places? A lot of these things are organizational and process related, which makes this entire conversation extremely interesting.
Okay. Now, with regards to continuous integration, continuous deployment, which group is in charge of securing this? Is it the developers, the IT security stack, or the cloud providers, or perhaps all three of them?
I want to refer back to Amazon, because Amazon is probably one of the oldest IaaS infrastructure as a service providers out there, and they're definitely the biggest one in the market. And they have a very interesting positioning paper that they have been promoting, talking about shared responsibility model and shared security model. In this paper, they, of course, explain how Amazon itself has a very strong ties and responsibility for compliance, for securing the servers and the facilities, the physical facilities, and for making sure the connection to the Amazon container, connection to that AMI, the networking layer, the physical computing, the routers within the Amazon data centers, all of that is secure. But at the same time, they're very clear that the security of the application that runs within the Amazon, security of the data that the application processes, security of the users themselves and how they connect to the applications. All of that is very much the responsibility of the application owner. Now, you asked about CI/CD and how that affects who is securing what. So hopefully CI/CD here is a process that the application owner is responsible for. So looking at that process, we have the dev, people, developers, R&D engineers who check the code in, and they're in charge of the CI. And then we have operations, and they're in charge of making sure the code is tested and deployed into production. And there's the operations. In many cases, these two teams are now combined into a single organizational entity called DevOps. But security, that's an interesting part. Security is really a part of this DevOps environment. If you think about the old days when the software was developed in iterations, even not so old days, companies using Scrum and looking at 2-week cycles, before the company has actually released a piece of software into production, what you might see is one or even two iterations after the functional testing is complete that would be dedicated to making sure that security testing is done on that software. Frequently what you'd see is people releasing a beta version of the software and starting external testing cycles on it and then doing security testing on it in parallel, which is all great if your development and release cycle is 3 to 6 months. If your entire cycle is an hour, how can you take 2 weeks to security test it? And that's how security teams work. So when it comes to CI/CD, the new processes for securing things need to be developed. And honestly, there is no room for any other team if your cycle is one or two hours. So at that point, the security functionality really needs to be incorporated into this DevOps team. And whether it's the developers themselves that get trained into applying security and understanding security concepts, if it's an external or now internal security resource that gets pulled in and becomes a part of this development team, it really needs to be unified and highly automated, because even that in that same team, there is still no 2 weeks time to conduct security testing. So something needs to be done to make it more agile on that side. And this is exactly the concept of DevSecOps. It's still in infancy, but it's growing.
Sounds excellent. Now, what security tools are used to protect the continuous integration and the continuous deployment processes?
Like I said, DevSecOps is still fairly young. At the same time, especially forward-looking organizations are very clear that this is something necessary and something coming down the pike. Interestingly, it's not just DevSecOps that is very young. DevOps itself, even though surveys claim that as much as 80 or 85% of corporations out there use DevOps, it's really not across the board yet. They may have one or two pilot projects that use DevOps, but broader development may still follow a slower, agile, even watershed cycle. For those organizations that have already moved to DevOps and realize that there is this gap between the old way of the security process and the new deployment DevOps methodology, they are looking at a variety of tools with how it should be or how to automate security. And in fact, I was sitting at a Gartner infrastructure and architecture conference a couple of months ago, and they've provided an excellent overview of what tools are making their way into the CI/CD process to ensure security. And most frequently what you see there are fast tools, which is static code analysis that individual developers can launch to make sure that the code they've written passes the basic litmus test. Then there is a reputation service, and that stems from the fact that 70 to 80% of modern code base is reused or uses some kind of open source components. So to make sure that those open source components are robust, there are reputation services out there that can check that you got the right version, that it's the production branch, that it's active and currently maintained. So that's the other one. And then last but not least is security testing in a dynamic way. And this is where Volaram plays as well. We have a product called a FAST framework for application security testing that integrates directly into the CI/CD environment. And the important part from my perspective is that instead of asking people to add security expertise to the DevOps teams, what this product does is it automatically creates security tests that are aware of the context, aware of the process, aware of the check-ins and tests that the development team is currently focused on, and adds a whole new area, a whole new focus on security and robustness without stepping outside of this tight timeframes and constraints of the CI/CD process.
Okay, sounds wonderful. Now, how is the conflict solved that the DevOps may be in charge of security, but they may not have the required expertise in order to carry out or execute specific?
Right, so DevSecOps is tough, and timeframes are extremely short as well. So individual developers may even not know the terminology. If my tool is out there looking for a fast traversal vulnerability or remote code execution vulnerability, you have a kid coming out of college who has learned Java. He doesn't know the terms. He doesn't know the risks. He doesn't know what to look for. So to ask him to develop a test even that could look for a vulnerability like that, you would need to send him to an entire training course of 6 to 8 months and then sit him down in a security team to get some hands-on experience. Obviously, that is not a viable solution. You can't have every individual developer to be a security expert as well. So there are a number of ways to get around that. Introducing security expertise into a team so that if they have something, they can walk it over to their security mentor and talk it through with them. But personally, I'm more partial to automation. And this way, security teams, security professionals can institutionalize their knowledge. They can create security policies. They can create libraries of security tests. All external vendors like ourselves, same thing. We have libraries of tests. We have policies. We have rules. And we have tools that automatically figure out what type of application, what application context, what specific functions we need to secure here, and to recommend and select specific security tests that match up. So this is how you can do it without the conflict in the current CICD environment. Of course, it's for the 85% of projects out there that still do not have this DevSecOps mindset, there is still a bit of conflict because the security team wants to follow the security process, which is only test for security once development and regression testing and create fixes. Everything is frozen, so you can ensure that there are no vulnerabilities and the attacks would not get through to the software. While developers are measured by how quickly the features they develop get into production, and hence the conflict, developers want speed, and security wants to test frozen code that doesn't get developed anymore.
Okay. Now, the DevSecOps concept has launched into full adaptation and deployment. But do you think it's moving at too fast of a rate or should slow down a little bit?
I don't think it should slow down at all. I think it's maybe poorly understood. And what we can really use is more awareness of what DevSecOps is. And a bit earlier, we talked about what you should think about when securing CI/CD process. So I think these two go very much step hand by hand. As DevSecOps develop, the thinking about how the corporate structure and corporate organizational structure should grow with it, and what other security concepts should feed into DevSecOps, even if they outside of the immediate development environment. That's the key for this process developing organically and becoming a reliable part of the development process.
What would it take to secure the cloud migration processes?
People. You really need people to understand the new way of thinking, both in conjunction with DevOps and CI/CD, and as you move into the cloud. They need to understand that certain things are taken care of for them, like network security becomes much less interesting because that AWS VPC or similarly in the Google Cloud environment, network security is already a native part of the cloud security. So you think our layer 4 regular firewalls, they're not as important anymore at that point. But at the same time, cloud introduces new concepts, different authentication, different backup processes, certain cloud native services that get used by cloud environments. And this require new and different security measures. And the other part of cloud migration is, of course, it accelerates the application of containers. Containers and perhaps container management systems like Kubernetes make cloud migration much easier, and they can also be used both in private clouds and in the public clouds, whether it's Google or Azure or Amazon, but can think of as applications have their own set of interesting security concepts, like securing APIs, both APIs coming into the distributed application and then east-west API within the distributed application. So all of that is a part of a new way of thinking, and I think we really need to teach that. We need to teach that at universities. We need to bring our developers up to speed. We need to bring our executives up to speed so that even at the boardroom level, there is a better understanding of what risks are mitigated by migration to the cloud and what new risks are introduced.
Finally, as we wrap up the show, when do you think we will see DevSecOps reach the full maturation point in the real world?
My sincere hope that it's going to be soon. But looking at how DevOps is developing, I predict that we will see a broad penetration in the next 2 to 3 years. So most of larger corporations out there will have enclaves of DevSecOps for individual newer projects and projects migrating to the cloud. But as far as the actual broad adoption of DevSecOps for 50% or more of the entire infrastructure, that is going to take much longer. But we are going to do our best to evangelize the concept and to make sure that gradually the way of thinking, which is the most important part, becomes a part of the training and becomes a part of the organizational culture. And with that, the hope is that we can get there sooner.
Renata, we thank you very much for your time this weekend. Hope you have a good weekend. And we hope to chat with you again here in the near future.
Sounds great. Great podcast, Travis. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great one. Take care.
Bye.